Today's show is sponsored by MongoDB. As a programmer, you think in objects. With MongoDB, so does your database. MongoDB is the most popular document database built for modern application developers and the cloud era. Millions of developers use MongoDB today to power the world's most innovative products and services, from cryptocurrency to online gaming, IoT, and much more. Try MongoDB today with Atlas, the global cloud database service that runs on AWS, Azure, and Google Cloud. Configure, deploy, and connect to your database in just a few minutes. Check it out today at mongodb.com/atlas. That's mongodb.com/atlas.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to the Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina, with a holiday edition of the podcast here. As we go into the holidays, you know, news tends to slow down a little bit. It gets a little bit harder to schedule guests, but we have also found too, so we were kind of, you know, falling into some traditions here of, you know, we like to do some end of the year wrap-ups, and then we've got a, you know, end of decade on top of it as well. So Brian, how are you doing first of all? And let's jump into cloud news of the week after that.
I'm good. Like you said, getting ready for the holidays, sort of shutting it down for work. Luckily in the regular day job, we sort of shut down the last week, which is nice. We don't have sales. Our quarter ends in February. So I don't have sales reps calling me at 11 o'clock at night trying to close a crazy deal. So yeah.
So it's employee, like company mandated shutdown.
Exactly.
That's
which is good.
Such a great perk.
Exactly. So, yeah, so it's crazy. So we started this thing, what, back in 2011. I'm not sure we would have ever thought we would have gotten to the end of the decade still doing the podcast, but we're cranking along. A lot has changed in the last 9 years or so. So we thought we'd spend a little bit of time on this show going through that. And then the other thing we've been doing is we sort of collect up a bunch of questions from people about just, you know, people will ask questions all the time, sort of a mailbag. We don't typically cover them on the show, but we've gotten enough now piled up that we thought we'd sort of include them in the end of the decade show. They're all kind of relevant towards looking forward sort of questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll jump right into Cloud News of the Week here. We really only have one decent-sized story this week, and that's Intel with the acquisition of Habana Labs for $2 billion. So what is that?
This is sort of
it's chips, right?
Yeah, it's chips. It's Intel had a program called Nervana, Nervana, which was, you know, a bunch of chips they were doing and some associated software for AI. And apparently, at least based on some of the commentary we see out there, that was going either not as well as they planned or slower than they planned. And they acquired this company, Habana Labs, out of Israel. So your classic, you know, probably ex-Israeli military, small startup with some pretty interesting IP intellectual property. And the kind of the word in the analysis that we read was this will likely replace that that program. So, you know, it is getting to be very interesting as we've seen NVIDIA and others really ramp up around AI, the chipsets. You know, we saw Amazon announced the whole Nitro chipset, you know, kind of starting to push out Intel. So Intel's having to find some new places to find revenue and places where they're, you know, driving value in computing.
ASICs are cool again.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Who knew?
Hardware is eating the world, right?
That'll be the trend for the next decade. We're going to do trends from this decade. So we're already predicting the trend for the next
decade. That's right. 2020, get out of software, get back into hardware. Kids, go back to school for mechanical engineering and electrical engineering.
Yes, there you go.
So that's sort of the news of the week. I thought what we'd do, since this section is always a little bit sponsored, which we you know, we're very, very thankful to all the companies that help us sponsor it. I'm gonna before we kind of give a big thank you to them, Aaron, do you remember way back when we started this show, we made up some fake sponsors? Do you remember what any of those were?
Don't. I remember we got a lot of crap for them.
No, we did. We felt, because back then, I think we had about 50 listeners or maybe 100 listeners, and we thought, how do we make the show seem bigger than it was at the time, right? We had the massive
studio.
And
it was a bit of a goof.
It was a goof.
It was just like, you can kind of tell they were fake. At least I thought you could.
Yeah, but here's the crazy thing is I listen to, you know, a bunch of podcasts now, and the ads that are on there, I mean, it's toothbrushes, it's underwear. I heard one the other day for apples, just apples. It's, you know, so I'm like, they weren't that far off. We're basically like, you know how the Simpsons always predict everything. We were basically predicting the future of podcast ads back in 2011.
And I have no idea if they're still around, but I still think to this day, my favorite one that was not, you know, one of our tech companies and also wasn't a joke one was Mangrate. Do you remember Mangrate?
Oh, yeah.
Are they still around?
I have Mangrates on my grill. They're fantastic. They're really good. If you want to have really good grilling on your grill, yeah, they're awesome. yeah. So with that, in all seriousness, big thank you to our sponsors who've been with us all year. Datadog, Liquid Technologies, MongoDB, Snowflake, the CyberWire. Thank you to everybody who has been a big sponsor. Folks, we hope you get a chance to go check out those sponsors. All great companies. We don't endorse people that we don't sort of get to know and kind of, you know, believe in the things that they're trying to sell. So hopefully you get a chance to at least go check out what they are proposing. And with that, we're going to get to our interview, or not our interview, kind of our look back at the 2010s and kind of answer some questions from our readers. So today's episode of the Cloudcast is sponsored by Datadog, the monitoring platform for cloud scale infrastructure and applications. Datadog provides dashboarding, alerting, application performance monitoring, and log management in one tightly integrated platform so you can get end-to-end visibility quickly. And it integrates seamlessly with AWS so you can start monitoring EC2, RDS, ECS, and all your other AWS services in minutes. Visualize key metrics, set alerts to identify anomalies, and collaborate with your team to troubleshoot and fix issues fast. Sign up for a free trial today, and Datadog will send you a free t-shirt. Visit datadoghq.com/cloudcast to get started. That's datadoghq.com/cloudcast. And we're back. You know, we typically are a very forward-looking podcast. I think most people think of us as the guys who are, you know, kind of always looking forward, not a lot of looking back at stuff. But we thought, you know, kind of with the decade ending, the 2010s ending, would be good to go kind of look back, not in sort of historical perspective or, you know, kind of nostalgia, but really kind of look at what's changed, maybe kind of evaluate why some of these things changed. So we're gonna kind of dig into some of what we think are the bigger trends from 2000, I guess for us, 2011 through 2019. Where do you want to start?
Yeah. Let's start with hype.
Ooh, yeah, that's a good one.
You know, it is. Yeah, we kind of often say that our tech our podcast is an emerging tech podcast, and it's all about riding the waves and identifying the new trends, and because of that, we tend to, you know, if you ever want to win buzzword bingo, this is probably the podcast for that. But at the same time, too, there's a number of waves that turned into something, and there's a number of waves that I wouldn't say crashed, but maybe didn't turn out like they were supposed to. So what are some of those, Brian?
So I made a list. I think they fall into a couple of categories. So on the list, it's as far as sort of hype or things that we covered that would fit in that OpenStack, right? The sort of the original, I'll sort of say, open source project that was going to try and disrupt the public cloud, or sort of the one cloud, right? The first one to kind of go after Amazon. We saw HCI sort of emerge, right? We first started this show when we heard about converged infrastructure, not hyper-converged, but converged infrastructure. Hyper-converged kind of became the real reality of putting compute and storage together and managing it as a unit. I had Docker, sort of the whole container phenomenon. For those of you listening along, we just said Docker, so you can drink. A whole lot of PaaS stuff and Cloud Foundry sort of leading the way in the PaaS world. Obviously, Kubernetes is now the big hype. We never covered a lot of blockchain, but blockchain got a lot of hype. It was going to replace databases. It was going to decentralize, you know, money and all sorts of stuff. And then obviously these days it's AI and ML and serverless. So we've covered the gamut. You know, I think some of them are still very, very viable, and some of them have proven to be, I don't want to say have gone away, but less than industry changing, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a couple of those that jump out at me is this concept of evolutionary steps. You almost take OpenStack being an evolutionary step to eventually what ended up being, you know, Kubernetes and kind of a next generation cloud native architectures. You know, we had converged infrastructure, which turned into hyper-converged infrastructure. And so for a lot of these, I won't say Cloud Foundry was one of those, but I will say PaaS in general, I feel like was something that was a step as well. And so a lot lot of them was, you know, the version one, if you will, or the first step into something. And then it was a little bit of like, okay, how can we improve on that? Or what is the next iteration or generation of some of these, you know, technologies or trends? And so the biggest thing I get out of that was I feel like there was a lot of steps, if you will.
Yeah.
In the last 10 years.
Yeah. And I think there was, you know, we have this terrible tendency in our industry to think that, you know, one thing kills the other. We're actually going to get to that in a mailbag question. But I think we learned a lot, right? I mean, prior to, say, OpenStack, and people will say, oh, that's not really true. But for sort of mainstream IT, other than Linux, you know, OpenStack was really kind of the first foray into, hey, we're going to have to deal with open source, right? Open source is going to be a thing that we're going to have to figure out. What does it mean? How do vendors deal with that stuff? Like, what do I do with that software? Do I just download it? Do I buy it? Do whatever, you know, and the lessons that came out of OpenStack for good and bad, you know, kind of led to things like Docker, you know, it led to things like Kubernetes and, you know, kind of how people interact with vendors, you know, could open source be mainstreamed into the mainline enterprise and stuff. So yeah, I think that the thing that you talked about in terms of it, you know, we saw building blocks sort of happen and to some extent, maybe people look at those as successes and failures, but they kind of needed to happen in order for us to get even just to where we are in 2019.
Agreed. Completely agree.
Yeah.
Do you want to move on to the next one?
Yeah. No, go ahead. Go ahead. Jump on.
I think the next one is just really interesting to me. You know, a lot of times, and we've talked about it many times of like, you know, you've got this idea of probably every decade you could name the big tech companies.
Yep.
But also they tend to go away over time.
Right.
But, and I think Microsoft, which would be the next one, and the reinvention of Microsoft is really interesting to me because it's probably going to be go down in history as one of the exceptions to that. Because the reinvention of Microsoft over the last decade, I think they've gone from, you know, teetering on the edge of being one of those that faded into history into, you know, really having legs and being a force into the next decade.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, there really has only been maybe three companies that have survived, you know, from decade to decade, like you said, you know, one of them being IBM, you know, and IBM's in, you know, maybe not the leadership position they were decades ago with mainframe, but still very viable, you know, $100 billion in revenue. Apple basically, you know, got near death, probably within days of going bankrupt, and they're now a behemoth. And then Microsoft. And Microsoft's was one of those ones where, you know, like the other two, you had to completely reinvent yourself, right? I mean, you had Steve Ballmer who was saying, you know, open source is cancer. You had him, you know, poo-pooing mobile computing if it wasn't a Windows device. And Satya Nadella has come in and just completely reshaped who they are, right? The things that they used to say were terrible, they now not only believe in, but they embrace. You know, he's moving into new business models, new delivery models. I mean, for me, the biggest thing is, you know, it used to be with Microsoft, like everything in some way, shape, or form always came back to Windows. And nowadays, you rarely ever kind of even associate them with being the Windows company, right? I mean, yeah, somebody might have a Windows laptop, but it's not of front and center for Microsoft. And I think figuring out how they did that is, you know, going to be something they write about in business books for decades to come.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. But yeah, and I would also add, you know, Satya did write a book. I highly recommend it. Go read it.
Yeah. So the third one I had on my list, and again, you know, if we went back to 2012, 13, 14, or whatever, and you had told me, hey, the company that is essentially cloud computing, Google, was not going to be one of the top two, maybe even top three cloud computing, kind of delivering cloud computing companies, I would have been shocked. But in reality, right now, they are somewhere between third and fourth, depending on, you know, kind of which analyst firm and how you analyze numbers. You know, and there was an article that came out this week that basically said, you know, about a year ago, their leadership team got together, you know, Sergey and Larry and Sundar, and they said, you know, maybe we shouldn't even be in cloud computing. And I know that's a conversation we actually were having, you know, a year and a half ago, going, you know, are they ever going to get out of the little starting point they are? But yeah, I'm sort of shocked that Google is not bigger than they are just based on their technology prowess, right? We've talked about their struggles with, you know, talking to human beings, which is not a Google strength, but I'm surprised technology-wise they haven't been able to get bigger than they are in delivering cloud computing.
Yeah. And to kind of pin this to the last one as well, you know, if we say Microsoft and it will go down in history as one of the great reinventions, I think Google will go down in history as one of the big like head scratchers. Because I first of all, I completely agree with you, but you know, internally, it would be really interesting to see a study someday of, yeah, why they could never, it was a little bit of that, you know, this is one of those that the technology being the best technology doesn't necessarily automatically get you revenue, doesn't automatically get you growth, doesn't automatically get you customers, because the tech is good. The problem with it is they just fundamentally have never been able to figure out how to communicate the business value out and monetize that out. And yeah, it is amazing of at the end of the day, you know, Microsoft understood that and Google didn't.
Right. 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 Well,
because there was times in this podcast where we were debating, it's like, well, AWS is first and Microsoft or Google might be second. We'll
right,
see.
Right.
And now it's unquestioned.
Yeah.
Who's second and who's third.
Yeah. I think the big difference, and again, we may be completely off, but this is just sort of an outsider's perspective. I think, you know, Microsoft has always been a company who was engaged directly with their customers, right? You know, it just in the past it was ELAs and, you know, desktop licensing software, but they always had a channel for communicating with their customers and to a certain extent, you know, at least they would listen, right? They didn't always were great at responding, but they would listen. And so they had to, you know, change the way they delivered the technology, which is, you know, still challenging moving from, you know, selling boxes of software to delivering it as a service. You know, Google never, you know, I mean, for as long as they've been in business, never really had a direct channel for talking to their customers, even when they were doing ads, right? It all became, you just placed, you know, auction bids for ads and things like that. You know, so sort of getting into the, I mean, we've said forever, I mean, if there was one theme in this podcast for 10 years, it's been, you know, at least in the enterprise space, enterprise software, enterprise IT is a people-centric business, right? Technology is a byproduct of it, and I don't think Google ever has grasped that concept. You know, they occasionally will have somebody on Twitter who goes, no, we talk to customers, and it's like, yeah, but I don't think you understand what it means to deal with enterprise customers, right? Like it first and foremost, it means, as crazy as their stuff may sound to you, you have to go, huh, okay, maybe we figure out how to solve that problem, and it might mean standing on your head, but it means you got to go solve that problem. And Google's always been like, well, that's not how Google would do it. And,
right.
You know, that's, I mean, you know, if there's ever,
and there's the disconnect.
Yeah. If you ever get, you know, if in 2023, they're not number one or two and they decide to exit the business, I think their tombstone will say, well, that's not how Google did it. And, yeah. You know, if they can fix that, awesome. I mean, they've got massive capacity and massive technology, but the people piece will always, you know, that'll be their make or break.
Yep. Agreed.
What else is on your list?
All right. Well, it's related to enterprise and enterprise software, and that's the rise of open source in the enterprise. And at the same time, you know, that ripple effect it created. There are lots and lots of challenges across the industry. You know, this kind of combines a lot of the previous things we were talking about of, hey, you know, a lot of folks were used to ELAs and they were used to, you know, a certain way of dealing with hardware and dealing with software, and open source kind of came in and turned it all on its head.
Yeah.
And it's been really interesting to see both the adoption of it as well as the ripple effect, because I would say, and we've said it before, you know, VMware is probably one of the last very, very large closed source, you know, multi-billion dollar companies.
Yep.
I just don't see another one coming up, and everything's going to be open source. Everything's going to be as a service. There's just these trends in the industry and how it shifted over this decade.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of interesting pieces to it. One, yeah, we've said that about VMware, and then I think about like AWS, and I think to a certain extent they are the new great sort of closed source company. It's just their delivery model is different. Right. And that doesn't mean they don't do some things in open source, but, you know, fundamentally, like, you're not able to download the operational model of AWS. But your point about VMware being probably the last great, software only company. That's probably true. I think the other thing that's really interesting is, for years and years, if you pointed to open source and you said like, who's been commercially successful, everybody would say, well, that's Red Hat. And then almost immediately afterward, they go, and there'll never be another Red Hat because, Red Hat had some unique, timing or circumstances or whatever it was that allowed them to be Red Hat and allowed them to get big enough to kind of pull away. And yet, we've had VC after VC either come on this show or we've talked to them, and they continue to invest in open source, companies that are based on open source. And it's the weirdest thing of like, there's part of the industry that's like, there will never be another company that's Red Hat. And then they're investing in companies that they somehow, I think, perceive will do what Red Hat did to make money. It's a weird conundrum that's created.
Yes. Yeah, no, it is. It'll be really interesting to see how this happens over the next decade.
Yep.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Next thing I had on my list is, this is probably just more of a comment than anything else because, people are investing in this space, but everybody seems to still suck at security. It's a hard problem. It's just that security is now elevated to the front page of newspapers all the time, right? Everything is, every week it's some data breach. And I don't know if that's a good thing. I don't know if it drives more innovation because the risks are higher, or if it's creating even more, department of no for security groups, right? Like I kind of sense a little bit of both.
As many know, coming from kind of a data protection background most recently in the day job here, I'll add something else to it that, is security related, but is more data related. And it's this natural evolution of, okay, data protection from what, right? Well, data protection from what? The up and coming trends are on the nefarious side. It's ransomware. Yep. you get headlines all the time of so-and-so was attacked by ransomware, and, IT is stretched thin. IT doesn't have the budgets. IT is kind of, keeping everything strung together. When somebody gets hit like this is when the underbelly gets exposed, if you will, of how long it takes them to recover and how prepared they are and how bad they've been, running along behind the scenes. And then the flip side to that is the governmental and regulatory side of all of this, between GDPR in Europe and California privacy law that's, probably going to pass before too much longer. And I would think other states, adopt something similar or maybe even nationally here in the United States. And so, all of those in some way, shape or form are related to our consequences of security. And it's going to be forced upon us, I think, in the next decade.
I agree. So two more things we had on our list of trends, and then we're going to get to some of the mailbag questions. The next one I had, and this one is really kind of maybe more over the last couple of years than the early parts of the decade. I'm seeing this sort of very distinct shift from sort of centralized groups, enterprise architects and so forth, making, big company-wide decisions about technology, where the company's going, what they're going to adopt, how they're going to adopt it, to a lot of autonomy and associated budget moving out to these distributed groups, right? Whether they're lines of business, they're developer-led groups, they're, office of CTOs or whatever. I think that's a very interesting trend because what that does is it says, it's much more difficult to get consistency in a business, which may or may not be a good thing. But you also see groups that, people are leaving after a couple of years because they've kind of got something done. They got it on their resume and they can move on to another place that maybe allows them to, make a little bit more money than they were at the previous place. And you didn't necessarily see that in the past where people were doing things centrally. So I think, more of that distributedness, access to on-demand resources is going to be a big shift in IT.
Yeah. And it really is at the end of the day, too. On the tech side, it is on demand and as a service, as a trend. And then on the people side, it is, I feel like the freelance model, if you will, right? It is becoming more and more pervasive in our culture. People are doing less and less times at companies, and it is a little bit more of what's in it for me as a trend.
Right. The last one I had on our list, and I think if we had gone back to 13, 14, 15 or something, there was a lot of discussions where people saying, okay, what thing should I learn next? And if you were in the infrastructure world, it was always like, you know, you got to learn automation, man. Automation's going to be the thing. You know, automation's what makes cloud work. And people were like, oh, yeah, maybe, you know, should I learn Chef or Puppet or Ansible or Salt, right? We saw, you know, VMware investing in Puppet. We saw, you know, Red Hat acquired Ansible. We saw, you know, big investments in things like Chef and other stuff. And nowadays, I mean, you still hear about the tools, but it's really moved on to a much different way of, you know, sort of automation, but sort of things have pushed back more in the dev realm, if you will, right? Those aren't sort of front and center companies that people talk about changing IT. They're just tools.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's something, and it'll come up in the questions as well, but yeah, we moved on from config management to infrastructure as code. And again, I think it was it was a natural evolution and steps, right? And yep. Config management was a step to the next one, which is the, you know, the idea of dynamic infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, cool. So, you know, is that all the trends from 2019 or the 2010s? No, not necessarily. I think those were probably the biggest ones that we highlighted throughout our show. And, you know, folks, if you want to go back and look and listen, you know, there's lots of episodes about those topics. We'd love to kind of hear your feedback if you think we missed a few. Definitely maybe something we can cover in 2020. Aaron, we've gotten lots and lots of questions over the years. We've never really done a lot of mailbag, but we thought, well, we'll collect them together. There's been a lot of good ones. You want to jump into the very first one that's on the list?
Yeah. Absolutely. So question number one from Thomas T. If you had to advise someone that's 25, 35, 45 about career path in IT, what tips might you give them?
Good question, Thomas.
And I have some, but do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll take 20s. Okay. Not that either one of us are sort of covering that.
We're do we remember what that's like?
Yeah, we're now that we're in our late 60s, it's hard to remember those days. No, I mean I think the reality is if you're in your 20s, you know, and if you, I'll kind of give good perspective on this. There's a podcast called Software Engineering Daily. Jeff Meyerson does a really good job with that. And Jeff basically is somebody who's in his 20s who, you know, kind of when I listen to his perspective on stuff, there is no concept of data centers, right? Like he will frequently say, like, I've never worked in the data center. I've never had to deal with things that were in the data center. They've always been in the cloud. So, you know, I think from that perspective, you know, if you're in your 20s and something, you know, you're probably best to be looking forward unless you're like, hey, I'm going to become a COBOL developer because I hear there's a scarcity of them. But yeah, I mean, I think you've got to have development skills. I think you need to be thinking about what does the world look like in terms of the cloud, right? People like A-Cloud Guru do an awesome job of training you up on how to use AWS and Azure and Google and Linux and other stuff like that. You know, I think you're probably most likely thinking, you know, what does the world look like in terms of sort of composable services, right? So it's APIs and business logic. And I would keep your focus at that point, because that's where you're going to find sort of ability to differentiate. That's where, you know, most of the meetups you're going to go to are focused on. And most likely that's going to give you the longest sort of career path. The only other thing I'd say for 20 somethings is, you know, just, be prepared to make lots of changes. I mean, you think about all the choices that are out there. You're probably not going to get locked into one thing for more than 4 or 5 years at any given point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll take 35s. Sure. But I'll also just add 25s. I had written down one simple statement: don't get stuck on a tool.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, don't, you know, it to exactly that. It's more learning about the concepts behind the tool, like, because the tools will change.
Right.
And 35s is, for me, is all about, okay, taking everything and then learning big picture. Right. Learning the implications of those tools, learning the implications of those technologies, and learning, you know, at a higher systems level, how everything is interconnected and how all the jigsaw puzzle pieces fit together and how everything works end to end. Because at that point, you know, a lot of folks in their careers are sort of looking to grow. They've throughout their 20s and early 30s have been, you know, I'm going to handle this point solution, or I'm going to handle this. And as your job scope changes, you want to keep moving up the stack, but you also want to, you know, move to a wider understanding of the organization as well. And so, you know, that is where I would say it's more about learning technology at a much higher scale and learning concepts in the industry and moving on from tools.
Yeah. 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 Your 30s is probably the hardest transition because you're moving from, you know, you were single. You had what you thought was unlimited time to work on stuff. You know, your hobbies could be curious and so forth. You get in your 30s and maybe you've got a family, you've got some other priorities in life and you've got to figure out how to deal with that. I think I'll take the 40s piece of it. I think the biggest one I would say at this point is, In terms of real life, you've got lots of time in terms to work. I think in terms of the tech industry, they tend to look at you as being pretty old. So at that point, you know, if you haven't been kind of focused on it, you're probably going to narrow your scope of what you're focused on. But my biggest thing would be figure out the thing that you are the absolute best at, right? You got to kind of ask yourself, you know, you're probably making a little more money than you were in your 20s and 30s. You may be working on a broader scope, but people are basically kind of evaluating, like, are you really, really good at something? Or could I replace you with somebody who's in their 20s, who's, you know, close enough to being good at what you do? And if you're a jack of all trade later in your career, that becomes a harder thing. If you are really, really good at something, double down on that, you know, double down on being a great, you know, people manager and grower of teams and taking on of problems. Maybe you're, you know, great at one or two technologies. Maybe you're great at just being, you know, good at talking to upper level management and selling ideas and whatever. But, you know, when you get to be later in your career, you're in your 40s, they're basically evaluating you. Are you really good at something or are you just, you know, okay at it and we're probably paying too much for you? So kind of be conscious about that sort of stuff. That would be my advice.
Yeah. And I wrote down one sentence and it actually mirrors yours, which is I just simply put, find your niche and your people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the other thing. Have a network of people that, you know, if something happens, you know, your company decides to make a change, like you've got people you can call on and potentially find something else. So yeah, definitely be networking throughout your 20s, 30s and 40s. That's probably the other great advice to give is don't ever rely just on yourself.
Yep. So you want to take question two?
Yeah. This one comes from Michael C. You guys see a lot of different technologies throughout your interviews on the podcast and talking to people. Which ones do you think have longevity, I guess, as of now, maybe? And which ones do you think are potentially overhyped? Well, I think we covered the overhyped ones. What do you see in terms of longevity if you were saying, hey, you know, 2020 and beyond?
Yeah. So I think from a longevity standpoint, it's actually, I'm going to kind of say this one fits in both, and that's Kubernetes in general. I don't feel like Kubernetes has hit that super hard trough of disillusionment yet. You know, it's still in the super, super, you know, everyone's talking about it, super, super buzz, everything's Kubernetes. If you don't know Kubernetes, you know, it's really hard in this industry right now. And I think that trough of disillusionment that naturally happens still has to happen. And I you're starting to see the edges of it when people are saying, oh, it's hard to operate or oh, it's this or oh, it's that. And so you're starting to see the very beginnings of that trough of disillusionment. And so that's I think we have another show where we're going to go into that. And maybe that's an emerging prediction for me for 2020. But then I also don't think I think it's going to hit steady state. I just don't think it's hit that steady state. The pendulum has to swing back slightly on it. And the other one I would add to beyond Kubernetes is just AI and ML in general. I firmly believe, again, it's super overhyped as a concept right now, but we haven't hit that revolutionary or evolutionary next step of what does that mean practically to most customers today?
Yeah.
So those are two.
Yeah. I think the two I would say, I'm not going to jump on Kubernetes. I'm biased in that, but,
that's why I took it. No, I'm just kidding.
I think the two I would say, I think there's going to be a lot that I know we don't recommend tools per se, but I think GitHub as a platform is really, really interesting. Especially if you interact at all with developers. But I think we're going to find that what people do, there's this thing called GitOps, which is beginning to sort of replace a lot of the config management tools. So if you're on the infrastructure side, sort of be looking at this GitOps thing, it's going to become the place where you can use the same tools developers do. But I also think we're going to see things like serverless and other stuff expanding out on that platform. And then I think the other one is just, as you may have made a career out of virtualization, i.e. VMware, I think you can make a career out of being good with the public cloud, right? Not necessarily one in particular, but understanding the concepts of how it works, understanding I think the biggest important thing is, like, I get how it works, but also I get what the sort of on-demandness of it means in terms of change, right? Like, you can take on a project that is an experiment that lasts for a month, and you know how to set that up correctly. You know how to scope it out in terms of pricing. You can explain it to managers. You can, you know, so, I mean, that shouldn't be sort of a new thing, but I think, you know, instead of saying, like, hey, be an AWS guru, I think, you know, pick one, doesn't matter. You know, they're going to have success and longevity for a while. But just understanding that the new concepts of what the on-demandness of public cloud means, I think is going to have a lot of longevity into 2020.
Yeah. And I think you already answered question three, but I'll give my take on it as well. So question three is, what disruptive technology is a more important skill to learn? And from Erica B., I actually think it's exactly what you just said. So if anybody wants the answer, rewind a little bit. No, but to follow on, I think this concept of, you know, especially since we have a lot of infrastructure heavy and either virtualization or ex-virtualization folks, you know, practitioners as our audience, double down on infrastructure as code. But I'll also throw in a company as well. And that's HashiCorp. I think any of the HashiCorp tools, I think more so than a lot of the others, and to your point about GitOps and some of these other things, I see them as a tool set that seems to also be, you know, kind of those one of those that's going to be an emerging standard going forward, that a familiarity with those and an expertise with those is just going to be almost expected.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the only other one I would say is, you know, you mentioned like AI and ML. Obviously, that's we talked about that for a while now. I think the thing to watch for that is we're seeing more and more tools that are starting to let sort of the citizen data scientist come along. And what I mean by that is, like, you don't have necessarily a background in data science, but you're like, hey, I can get data sets. I can pull them into these tools. And you start to learn the basics of how to do modeling. You know, I think the way to take away from that is, you know, every business is essentially becoming either a low-end business or a very high-end business. And the middle is sort of going away in terms of sort of you can't differentiate from the middle. And the thing that differentiates either on the high end or the low end is data. And so if you start to figure out what that is, and the analogy I will draw to that is, like, you know, when the early tools came out to build a website, you were hard coding, hand coding HTML, and then things like Dreamweaver and other tools came along, and it was like, oh, okay, everybody can build a website and do some stuff. I think we're going to start to see an explosion of kind of citizen data science type of tools. And if you can begin to just learn how to better understand data, regardless of what job you're in, I think what you'll find is you can optimize the things you do, even if it's 20%, 30%, that'll make a big difference. So take a look at that stuff.
Yep.
All right. Fourth one. We only got a couple of questions, so we're not gonna have a ton. From Seema J, what's the most misunderstood concept in IT, or sort of the intersection of business and technology today?
I'll go. I'll take first crack at this one.
Yeah.
Serverless. yeah. Solely because people get so angry at the name. But you know, I will say this, and you know, we've talked about it many times on the show. Still a firm believer, and it actually goes into our fifth question a little bit as well, which we'll get to slightly here in a little bit. Is this concept of serverless? What is it? What, you know, why is it useful? You know, is it an additional tool? Is it going to displace and take over, you know, containers and Kubernetes? Like, I really firmly believe there is just so much misunderstanding in our industry around serverless and the advantages of it, which, by the way, I'm a very firm believer it is going to be a disruptive technology going forward.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I'm gonna hit on one other one. My two cents on serverless is, if you think about the two big trends that either have been successful or partially successful. So PaaS as a thing that says, hey, I'd like to make developers successful. I wish the infrastructure would get out of the way. That's essentially what serverless does. And if you think about cloud computing and you go, it's on-demand computing that you only pay for what you use. That's what serverless does. And so, yeah, I think as people get past the name, which, you know, sorry, Jeff, or whoever invented it, it's, you know, it is sort of a thing that I think over time people will eventually get over. But we may at some point see sort of a renaming of serverless, whatever 2.0 is, because it does do the things that we've always said, hey, would be really beneficial. I think my biggest thing, and I kind of highlighted it before, I think this understanding that IT decision making is now becoming a distributed activity. I think you're either going to understand that or you're not going to understand that. And those that do understand it and figure out how to be successful in that, whether you're, you know, at an end customer dealing with it, or you're a vendor selling to it, or you're an SI, I think that's going to be one of those things that sort of makes and, you know, succeeds and fails in terms of what goes on. But just the distributed nature of decision making and budgeting and all that kind of stuff is going to happen, you know, and is beginning to happen.
Yep. Agreed.
All right. Last question we've got. You want to take it or you want me to take it?
No, I'll take it. So Jacob H., why do you think our industry is so obsessed with the idea that new technology will eliminate old technology? Has this ever really happened? And I actually, so I wrote some notes on all of this before we started. And
yeah,
my simple answer was, ha, I have no idea, but it's certainly true. and what I mean by that is I don't quite get why everyone thinks that the next wave is going to be, you know, the one thing to take over all of it, because I don't think it has ever happened, all going all the way back to the mainframe, right? Like, it's mainframe, then it was AS400, then it was client server, then it was virtual. Like, every single trend had a market that increased and then a market that decreased, but they never went away. It was just additional tools in the toolbox. It was an evolution or moving on and providing more value, both, you know, in cost reductions as well as being able to generate more revenue. And it's just our industry continually moving forward. But I can't think of a single one that completely went away and was decimated overnight, at least in the ones that have been the focus of this podcast.
Yeah. The only one I can think of, and I think this is actually a real true case story, is basically when the iPhone came along, it killed all previous phones, right? The whole, I mean, Nokia and all, you know, like that old model of a non-smartphone doesn't really exist anymore. I mean, for the most part. But otherwise, yeah, everything in IT, it just becomes, you know, a piling on of the last layer of IT. I think it's a couple of things. I think number one, we have this fascination with Silicon Valley, and we have this fascination with, you know, kind of the genius that figured out the idea that's going to, you know, get rid of the things that we dislike. And, you know, occasionally that proves true, but in most cases, it's a lot of hype. You know, and I think the other thing that we all forget is we see so much stupid amount of money getting thrown around by VCs, and we just assume, well, if they're throwing that much money at it and it's considered cool, that like businesses will throw that much money at it. And the reality is most new technology only gets so big because the amount of money that you have to spend to keep the old stuff working, you know, the old 80-20 rule, never catches up, right? So, you know, it's those two things. It's a great question by Jacob as to why we continue to do this over and over again. But, you know, this is one of the great things about having been in the industry for a long time is you've seen certain trends happen and you sort of go like, yeah, this one smells like that one from before. So I'm going to, you know, I'm either going to get really excited about it or I'm going to know how that story ends. So,
And I think that question ultimately very neatly summarizes this entire podcast.
Probably. Yeah. We
always good we ended on that. I don't know that we planned that, but it's good we ended on that.
Yeah. We always try and stay a little bit ahead, and we try and avoid the old stuff, but you know what? The old stuff is still there. So everybody who sent in a question, thank you very much. For those of you that aren't sure, you can always send questions to show@thecloudcast.net. In some cases we might make an entire show out of them. We've done that from time to time, and occasionally we'll wait until the next decade and pile them all up for a mailbag. So
we promise to answer your email within 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. That's our guarantee. So with that, I think we're going to wrap it up. We did not go 3 hours. I know everybody's been wanting us to do a 3-hour show like Andy Jassy, prove our stamina. We thank everybody for listening. We thank our sponsors for sponsoring the show. You know, with that, we're gonna kind of wrap it up. Thank you to everybody who you know listens, tells a friend. There is one more show for the year, which is our year end wrap up. Always maybe one of our favorite shows. But with that, Aaron, any last thoughts for the decade, if you will?
Yeah, I think it's just thank you, right? Just the gratitude. I don't think when you and I started this, and I always go back and joke about this from time to time. I swear the audio is still around somewhere. Me laying in bed with bronchitis, doing like the audio test of the very very first one of like, hey, are we going to test out the tools and do we want to do this? And like going from that to what it has, what it is today is just simply amazing. You know, never would have pictured that. And it's of course, you know, huge thank you to all of the listeners because of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So with that, folks, we're going to wrap it up. We will talk to you again next week. And we wish you all a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, Happy Holidays. And we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.